Hi, everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Leah, and on this episode, I am giving you a quick shot of romance, but author spotlight edition. And on this spotlight, I'm joined by author Jan Moran. Is it Moran or Morin?
It depends on where you are in the world. In the U.S., it's Moran. In Ireland, it's Morin.
Okay.
People correct me, say, I don't know how to pronounce my last name. And then in South America, it's Moran. So yeah, it's
Okay. Well,
all
welcome.
different. Thank you. I answer to everything.
Jan Moran is a USA Today and Wall Street Journal bestselling author of heartfelt women's fiction series Beach Reads, Family Sagas, and romantic 20th century historical novels. She dreams up her popular small town contemporary beach books on the sunny shores in Southern California. Don't miss out on the new releases and special offers. You can join Jan's Reader Club on her website for all her news. Pour a cup of tea or a glass of wine, open one of her books, and find yourself transported with characters you'll soon be rooting for as friends. Jan is an avid traveler, so you'll find her books infused with authentic locales and things she loves to research, from chocolate, wine, and food to history, fashion, and more. Readers often say that along with a heartwarming story, they also learn many fascinating details. As a native of Texas who lived on the East Coast and worked in Paris, Hong Kong, and Canada, Jan brings a wealth of experience to every book she writes. She welcomes you to her world, her wonderful world of storytelling. Well, welcome.
Thank you, Leah. It's wonderful to be here with you.
Well, I am so excited to talk to you about all the things. So let's just dive right into it. What initially drew you to romance as a writer?
Oh, you know, when I was young, I read a lot of the old school romances. Read Jane Austen, of course. And then I began to read, I remember Barbara Taylor Bradford. I think the first one that really made a huge impression on me was called A Woman of Substance. And when I read that, I was in school, I was in graduate school, and I identified with it because here I was, a woman on my own, trying to make my own way in the world. And it just really resonated with me. It was full of romance, but it was a different type of romance. It was about the woman's journey as much as the relationships. And that really resonated with me and lit the fire within me. I had tried writing my first novel when I was in seventh grade. So my love of writing goes way back to elementary school. But when I really began thinking about I'd like to do that someday, that's when it was. But as life has it, I had to do a few other things first. I think to gain experience to write about. So I have no regrets for coming to this a little later in life.
So what made you make that decision to write that first book and publish it?
Oh, well, you know, sometimes we make the decision and sometimes inadvertently it's made for us. So I had started a company. I was creating touchscreen fragrance and skincare finders, just like a phone, only much larger. And they were for Sephora and duty free stores around the world. So that's all the travel that I did. And while I was on those long transatlantic and transpacific flights, I began writing again. Right after graduate school, I had gone to LA. I was working as a consultant. And in my spare time, which I didn't have much, I discovered that UCLA, the University of California in Los Angeles, had an excellent writer's program. So I enrolled in that. And my first nonfiction book was a book on perfumery. That's how the interest in beauty and technology came about. So I created those finders for Sephora and Duty Free and ran it for a few years and then sold the company to them, to Sephora. So I was suddenly a CEO out of a job and a woman of a certain age. So I said, okay, it's time to remake my life and do what I want to do. And I thought if I, you reach a point where the kids are grown, they're gone. When you have them, you think those years are going to last forever. But because you just have so much to do. But When they're gone, suddenly there you are. And then my company was gone. And I thought, well, what do I want to do for the rest of my life? And I want it to be fun.
Yes.
And so I combined my love of writing, which I had started again on those long flights. I could only watch so many movies. So I
Yeah.
began to write and I escaped into this world of perfumery, history, World War II, and wrote a book called it was published under Scent of Triumph with
Okay.
St. Martin's Press. So that was published probably a year or two after I left, after the company was sold. So that's how I got into it. And then I decided I liked it a lot and
And just kept going.
just kept going. So I had a strong work ethic. And a lot of, a lifetime of experiences to draw on. And I could see myself doing that for the rest of my life. So that's what brought me
So second
into this
career
career.
was made.
Oh, probably third or fourth. Yeah.
So, is there a piece of advice that present author you would give past author you?
I would say no regrets. Many authors will say, oh, I wish I'd started writing when I was younger. I'd have, 100 books by now, or they regret having published certain books. And I think our lives make us who we are. So no
Definitely.
regrets. I would say write more books, keep writing. And my mother, right before she died, she said to me, and she was my first editor, and she said to me, never stop writing. So, when you make a promise like that to your mother, you can't stop. So here I am,
Well,
expect a
and
lot more.
the fact that she had such faith in you too, though, I mean, that's probably a huge boon for your self-confidence and the fact that it's like this, I found something that like I can appreciate because she appreciated it for me.
Oh, she did. And she encouraged me. English and creative writing, they were always my favorite subjects. And after she'd, and I knew that she had submitted stories to different publications, but it wasn't until after she died and I was going through her things that I found what we call ding letters, letters declining submissions. And she had saved so many of them. And so she tried, she really tried. And my heart went out to her because I was living her dream and I didn't even realize how much she had wanted it.
But that's wonderful, though.
Yeah.
That's so, I just, yeah, that's wonderful. So, is there a subgenre that you tend to read the most?
Oh, I love historical fiction, romantic women's fiction set in the 20th century. I love that. I was a big Outlander fan. But as much as I love history, I also love contemporary sagas. And so I loved reading Ellen Hildebrand, Mary Kay Andrews. I will read so many, many different things, cozy mysteries, Mary Higgins Clark. I grew up on her too.
I
I
love a Mary Higgins
loved,
Clark.
yeah, I loved her strong female characters. The protagonists were great. Biographies.
So you're a little bit of everything.
Yes, I read a lot of investment books, a lot of business things. So, yeah, I think we pick up things from all different genres.
Like I personally, like I typically only read romance. Like I'll pull like other books here and there every once in a while, but it's one of those things where I think I read so many outside of it, like growing up and when I was in college, and it just was I had to read them, and so it's like I can read whatever I want now. And like I read all the subgenres. Like I read the gamut of the romance, but like I just it's there's something about that romantic element that just gets me every time.
Oh yeah, I love that. And I love, my daughter-in-law writes reverse harem.
Oh, yeah.
So I read, oh yeah, I read those too.
I
They're
mean,
pretty exciting.
I do like a wide choose. Sometimes you just need to read that. Like, I will fully admit, like, I read some bonkers books. Like, I am willing to give pretty much anything a try. And like, we talk about on the podcast how like Becky and I, like, we like some weird stuff and we're okay with that.
Yeah, that's okay. I think it's empowering. And, there were things that w we couldn't read way back when. And yeah, it's sometimes people have, sometimes they'll say to her, "Oh, my mother would love your mother-in-law's books." Because I write more on the cleaner side, and I mean there's still some sensuality and some longing and some kisses, but I don't really get too deep into the sheets and
Deep into the sheets.
deep into the sheet, deep into the woods, whatever, wherever. And and also I was brought up where, I didn't even know curse words until I got into high school. I mean, I grew up in a, like a different century, literally. And so, but you don't know what the soundtrack going through my head is like, okay?
Oh, I
But
can imagine.
yeah, so, but I do tend to write, cleaner, just simply because, and I'm not talking about sex, I'm talking about the profanity, just simply because, I just, a lot of my readers appreciated that. So that's what I continue to do. And I do know those words now. They're a lot of fun in foreign languages, they don't have the stigma. So.
So that's one thing we always say on the podcast. Like, not every book is for everybody, but there is a book for everybody. 'Cause there are some people like they really gravitate towards like the filthier the better. And some like they like that cleaner aspect to it. And that's one of the things I love about romance as a whole is because there is literally a book for every person, no matter what they're looking for.
Yeah, I believe that too. And if people have said, "Oh, I don't really like to read," I feel like we just haven't found what you like to read yet. Or maybe you haven't found the audiobooks
Yeah,
that
exactly.
are you're going to love. So that makes a huge difference.
I read very fast, and so like I typically just eyeball books, but probably 2 years ago I started doing audiobooks, but I have a hard time listening to anything I haven't read prior, so I reread through audio a lot. But and so 'cause I like the background noise, I like that, but I also love the fact that if I'm not paying attention fully, like I still know what's going on, but every once in a while I'll pick up on something that I didn't notice when I eyeballed the book, and I'm like, oh, I see where that came from this time.
Yeah, we process words on a page or audio
Very
differently.
differently,
Different
yeah.
people process them differently. So,
Do you have any challenges? Do you see any challenges as a romance author, and how do you overcome them?
Maybe not specifically as a romance author, but just as a writer in general, focus. And I think that, from childhood, I always thought that focus was my superpower once I focused, but it took me a while to get there. So one thing that I've discovered in writing that will help me stay in the chair and not jumping up to do, oh, I just thought of this. Oh, I have to do
Do
that.
15 other things that
Yeah,
are
yeah, yeah.
cycling.
I'm the kind of person who has, 50 tabs open on their browser, and they're all there for a reason. So, I use something called Brain FM, and it's, I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's music, but under that, it has a soundtrack, beats that help to focus your brain. And so I use that cup of coffee, I'm good to go.
Yeah, I have heard of it. I know a couple people that use it because they have a really hard time focusing. I personally, like, I can't focus, so like I have to do not disturb my phone, and like sometimes go into like a corner where nobody come bug me because I get distracted very easily. So I totally understand that. So, in your writing process, are you a pantser or are you a planner?
Generally, I plan my books ahead.
Okay.
So I know what my next year is going to look like. I know what my releases are, and I'm very optimistic. But I, so there are times when, life
Life
happens. Life
happens, yeah.
happens. People get sick. Could be, I remember once my audiobook narrator, Erin Bennett, who is fabulous. She's one of the top narrators, and she got a sore throat. She
Oh.
had, you know, she had she had a raspy voice for a while and couldn't record, so that pushed some things out. Now, of
Yeah.
course, she's gotten very popular, so we
Yeah.
have to plan far in advance. So I do have the general outline of what I'm going to write, but when I sit down to write it, and I will do a rough outline. My rough outline is opening up a Word doc, doing chapter one through whatever, and then just as I think about it, okay, this is how it opens. This is, and just like three or four words by the chapter
Just
heading.
like bullet points almost.
Bullet points. And then from there, that's enough. I'll start writing. And then many times the story will change as I go along.
Well, because you have series where it's individual couples, like in the books, and then you have series where it's the same couple throughout the whole series, and it's like their saga almost. What draws you to both of those styles? Because I know some authors, they like the individual like books, and then some really thrive in the saga world. How do you separate the two or combine the two? Do you understand what I'm asking?
Yes,
Because
yes. And in the beginning, it was quite by accident, I assure you. But I did write my most popular one. Where is it? Seabreeze Inn. There are, I'm just working on book number 13, in 12 or 13, one of those in that series.
I was gonna say
And
12 comes out in like October, according to the
that's the one. That's the
okay.
one. Yes. And Seabreeze Harvest, you have really done your homework. I am impressed.
Thank you.
And so yes, so that one originally was meant as a trilogy.
Okay.
So I had one couple, one place, and I wrote that, started in 2019.
Okay.
I had the second book that came out, and the third one was coming out just as we were going into the pandemic.
Okay.
And I thought, I've got to keep writing for these people. So I came out with another one for Christmas, and people just wanted more, more,
Yeah.
more.
They fell in
So
love with them.
yes, fell in love with the characters, and I said, I have got to keep going. It revolves around Ivy Bay, and in fact, this whole and an old house, an old beach house that has a lot of secrets of its own. The former owner was suffered from Alzheimer's, and so she would hide things in the house. And so it's people say, well, what is it? Well, it's romantic women's fiction, but it also has these elements of romance, of historical mystery in it, because the things she finds are real. They have historical significance in the world, let's just say that. And there are all sorts of things that she finds. So this is a very long, slow burn with the mayor of the town, and who was her old teenage boyfriend. So we've got a little bit of second chance romance in there too. She's in her 40s, and I like writing about women who are a little older, who are 40 and up. Although my historicals are written generally women who are in their 20s, but I like to write multi-generational. So I'll have the main character, a mother, a grandmother, maybe children, just depends on where they are. In one of my first series, which is now called the Sunshine and Second Chances series, that one was a group of friends. So it was based on girlfriends, not exactly, but the idea. I had a group of friends in LA, and they were all very creative, and they worked in different industries. So that's how that one came about. And each one goes somewhere different. So Paris, Spain, Sydney, Australia, just New York, different places. So each one is a bit of a travel book. Coral Cottage starts off, now that one is primarily
One
the
couple.
same couple,
Yeah.
but there are three sisters. So we do get into others. The last one in that book deals more with the grandmother who raised them and
Oh.
her backstory and her history. And so a lot of my readers, they're all over the place. They're anywhere from their 20s into their 90s. And I love to write smart, savvy, intelligent grandmothers. So my readers love that. And they want to see them find their happily ever after or happily for now. And
There's nothing that
so.
I love more than like when we get like a grandmother's story or a grandfather's story, like those older characters who you just fall in love and then you get like more for them. Like, 'cause you just need to know like where they're at.
Yeah. What was their history? What are they hiding? I love family secrets. So a lot of my stories, especially my historical sagas, The Winemakers and Hepburn's Necklace, have a lot of family stories, family secrets. Why, when people immigrated to this country, what did they leave behind? Were there secrets they left behind? What were things that people hid from? In the 1950s, that today is considered acceptable. A woman's journey in the 1940s or 50s or 30s was very different from what our journey is today in terms of a woman's freedom to have bank accounts or run businesses, things like that. There were times when women had to have their husband's permission
To
to
do anything,
withdraw
really.
money from a bank account, even if it was their own money that they had inherited. So things like that, those historical details, I love to bring into both, of course, my historical books, but also my contemporary books because of those
Well, and that's
generation
something my
heritage.
friends and I have been talking about, how like we're all in the perimenopause stage and we're like the conversations that like we have as like adults are just so different than the conversations like we know our parents had. And the things that we talk about and how we talk about things is just so different from even 20, 30 years ago, like when we were kids. It's just like things have changed so much just in like the openness and like the tabooness. Like there were things that were very taboo and you didn't talk about them, but people are very open about them now.
That's true. That's true. So I like to include that. Miscommunication was another one. It's harder to miscommunicate today. Well, maybe not that hard. Texting, sometimes something
That's
that
the
is
thing. It's
meant in
not harder
fun.
to do. Like
It's
it just
different.
it's different.
Yeah. But of course, in my historical, sometimes there are letters that don't arrive. There are phone calls that might cut off. And this was very real. This happens. So people would lose track of each other. Occasionally in the news, you hear something about someone who found a sister or a brother they'd lost track of. And, maybe during World War II, and they had no idea
Well,
where the other one was.
and you hear the stories about like people like letters getting delivered 30 years later because like it was somehow like lost in the mail system and then all of a sudden showed up. Like, because I mean, stuff like that. I mean, not a lot of things are snail mail anymore because we live in a digital age, but like it happened more often than you realized.
Did. And well, today, of course, I mean, how many of us miss emails? They're sent. We know they're sitting in the inbox, but
You just scroll right past it.
you miss them, or they hit the spam box or
Or you're
something like
like
that.
me and you reply to it in your head, but you don't actually type it out.
Oh, yeah. I look at my drafts sometimes and say, oh, I didn't send
Yeah,
that.
that's what I do. Like, I, no joke, like I got an email a couple days ago and I replied in my head and I was like, oh, I got to type that out and send it. And then I got distracted. And
It
so I
happens.
sent it
So
yesterday. And I'm like,
miscommunication, still a thing, but
yes,
different.
it just manifests differently. So you write older characters typically, and you often have themes about starting over, like the widow, the widower, the divorcee, like moving like to a new place and reclaiming their lives. What draws you to this style of character and story?
Well, I think it's an experience that many of us live, and some of us live it over and over and over again. But it's, as you look back on your life, life is a series of chapters, and it's very rare that anyone's life just remains exactly the same forever. We just don't realize it at the time, but my father passed away when I was very young. And so someone once said, "Well, why do you write about women who are widowed? Have you ever been widowed?" And when I was younger, I could say no. But then I thought, well, I grew up with a widow. I grew up with a woman who had lost her husband and had to completely reimagine her life and figure things out on her own. And I had a front row seat to that, and I helped. And then of course I have done that too. I have moved cities, I have changed careers, I've had children, I have grandchild or a grandchild. I have a grand dog too. And I love that grand dog. And so we do have different chapters in our life, and it's not uncommon for women, in midlife to lose a husband either through death or divorce or separation or whatever, and suddenly you're on your own and you've got to figure this out. And I love to read biographies too of course, I have many friends who've gone through massive life changes. And then, I'm thinking of Katherine Graham from the Washington Post. There are a lot of women who had to step in and take over family businesses, back in the day that they were not prepared to do, but they did it. They figured it out. They learned. They stepped up. And that's what, to me, that's what's intriguing is when someone has to make a change in their life. What are they going to do? How are they going to handle that? What are they going to learn along the way? So I think about my readers, and a lot of my, with my business background, a lot of my characters are starting businesses. So I'm thinking, what do they need to do? What do they need to know about finances, about marketing, about developing a product or service, whatever it is. And so I love to take readers through that as they learn and figure it out.
Well, and
So.
it's one of those things where it's like grief is such a powerful and overpowering thing at times. It's like, how do you channel that? Like, what do you do with your grief? Where do you find your new normal? That's like what we like my family, like anytime we have like big things like that happen, it's like you don't go back to normal, you create the new normal.
Yes.
Not that, I mean, normal's relative, but
Oh yeah. Normal.
but new
But
normal for
your new
yourself.
chapter.
Because I mean we've went through some big stuff and it's like what how did we get through it and what how did we come out of it at the end of it? But it's like that new normal created this whole other pivot and lane that we were not expecting.
Right. And it's the resiliency that's necessary. Resiliency, creativity, having to reimagine your life or what you can do. Take inventory of your skills. So a lot of my characters are doing that.
So up next is Hibiscus Heights. And let's talk about that a little bit.
Sure, that is the fourth book in my Crown Island series. And Crown Island is based loosely on Coronado Island, which is just off the coast of Southern California. Not technically an island, but I guess it just sounded good. And so I don't know, maybe there was a high tide that day and it looked like an island. But I combined Coronado Island with an area in Chile. I had gone to South America, climbed Machu Picchu,
That's
and
awesome.
had a great time in Peru, Ecuador, Chile. And I was there, and there was this area called Valparaiso, and it was gorgeous. It was sort of like San Francisco in that it was built up on a hill, but it was very colorful. There were a lot of murals and homes were painted vivid colors. It's a World Heritage site. And I thought, this is it. This is it. I'm going to make this an artist colony. Also, Laguna Beach is not too far from me, maybe an hour north. And it's an artist community and they do a lot of things. And I thought, that's what I want. I'm going to make this an artist community. There's going to be this magnificent hotel called the Majestic, which is kind of like the Del Coronado on Coronado Island. In fact, built by the same architect. And so there's a lot of that in there. And that series is based on a family. So it begins with a mother, then it goes to the two daughters. Now I'm working on the or I have done the best friend's story. So in that one, each one can be read as a standalone, just like in my Sunshine and Second Chances. Those can all be read as standalones, even though they're interconnected, and you still, the other characters will have their walk-on moments. But I do like writing in one location. I learned my lesson there. The Seabreeze Inn series has been optioned for television series.
That's
So
exciting.
yes, but my other books took place in so many different locations that they would be very expensive to film. So I learned my lesson. Let's keep them in one place.
So the heroine of this book is Deb, and Deb is a woman who, based on the blurb, like she has things figured out. She knows where she's going. She knows what she's doing. And then Grant shows up, and not so much.
Not so much. A man from her past. And I like second chance romance. I do a lot of that. Some friends to lovers, some enemies to lovers. In this case, it was second chance and he became an enemy. And so they have to get over that and figure out what happened way back then. A little miscommunication. But it wasn't for the lack of trying. There were some obstacles thrown up in their way.
Because of
So,
course there are.
of course, there are, because where would we be without obstacles and tension and challenges that we have to overcome? And she's in her 50s, so
She's
she's
lived
got
some
it
life.
together. Yeah, she's lived some life. It opens, and she's just been involved in the renovation of the hotel, of the Majestic Hotel. So she has now been she's her design work is featured in Coastal Living and Design, a magazine that's not really real, but sort of like Architectural
Well, but it's
Digest.
like you took real things and put your own spin on it, and so then people can't be like, well, that's not right. And you're like, well, it's not real, so how do you know
Yeah,
it's
it's
not
not
right?
real, but it's close to real, right? It could be real. And so she and Grant returns, and Grant returns, but she meets his children first, and she doesn't realize they're his children. So I don't want to give away too much more, but there's this other great character, and I may have to use him in something else. Mateo owns a vineyard in Argentina and Napa Valley. Of course, he has ex-wives and kids scattered all over the place, but he's an intriguing character too.
So Susan Stoker, there's this like running joke that she likes to say that if you are going to name a character, you have to like be willing to write them a book. Because it never fails. She will, and cheer like some other suspense authors that I read, like they will randomly name, like have a character in the background, and they're not in the book very long, but it's just their little arc is so dynamic that people are like, so when is this person getting a book? Because I need their story. So Mateo seems like one of those characters where we're just really going to need his story.
Could be. So you have to be careful what you name your characters. And I have a
This is also true.
long list of of main characters, walk-on characters, last names, because I doubled up on a last name once, quite by accident. And I am there Googling, we're all doing this, Googling names in the middle of the night, as we're writing and saying, okay, I need 1950s male name. Okay, let's see what. And it serves up the same
Well,
line.
and Michael, like Michael is
Right,
always there.
Michael, right. And so those are, it's trying to find original names is a search, and trying to keep them straight. So,
Well,
yeah.
names are hard, no matter
Well, they are.
what.
They
So
are.
hard. So
So
hard.
maybe Mateo, maybe.
Maybe Mateo. I am
That sounds like a
intrigued.
song. Maybe Mateo.
I mean, I'd listen to it.
Yeah.
So Hibiscus Heights comes out July 21st, 2025. So
Yes.
soon. But thank you so much for coming on
Oh,
and chatting.
pleasure.
This has been wonderful. And I have, like I said before we started, like doing these interviews is one of my favorite things.
Yeah, I do. I love coming on, talking to other authors, talking to booksellers and influencers, podcasters. It's a lot of fun to hear different, how we each approach, whether it's writing or reading or fandom.
Oh,
And
yeah.
it's enjoyable. And I love your book stacks back there.
Oh,
I'm looking at
thanks. They're out of control. It's
that.
bad. And they
Yeah.
actually go that way also. Like my office is in our basement, and so like my half, like I'm in half of like the back corner, so my books span almost the half.
Yeah.
It's a problem, but
It is. It's a problem we all have.
well,
And
and I don't actually read my paperbacks. They are just my pretty, pretty trophies.
I understand. You're listening to audiobooks.
Well,
Yeah.
I read like on an e like I read my Kindle, so
Oh,
like, but
yes.
I
Oh,
will, and if
yes.
I love a book, I will totally get the paperback. And then like this stack here, I have, it's my Tara DeWitt stack, and there's multiple
Oh,
versions of it, of each book, because I just love them so much. It's a problem, but it's a good problem
It's
to
a good
have.
problem to have.
It really is. But
Yeah.
thank you so much for coming on. I have appreciated it so much.
Oh, it's been such a pleasure, Leah. Thank you.
And
Thank you.
until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.